Deep in the Amazon jungle of Ecuador, across the Andes from the Pacific coast of South America, an American oil company has discovered billions of gallons of oil. The oil lies beneath an Indian reserve in a national park, in one of the richest areas of biological diversity in all of the Amazon. The government of Ecuador, poor and deeply in debt, says the oil must be developed. Last year, government officials granted a concession to Conoco to build a road and pipeline to extract the vast new deposits. Conoco promised to take extraordinary precautions to protect the environment, saying this would be a model for rainforest development. Opponents of the plan point to the legacy of 25 years of oil development in Ecuador, scores of poisoned rivers and epidemic disease for the Indians living in the country's Amazon. Rainforest activists in the U.S. threatened a boycott of the DuPont Corporation, which owns Conoco, if the oil company went forward with the plan. Today, producers Sandy Tolan and Nancy Postero take us on a journey through the oil and Indian country of Ecuador to see what oil development has meant and what this new plan might hold for the people who live there. We begin at the edge of the jungle, near the headwaters of the Amazon.
Just at dawn, pale yellow light reveals an unfamiliar room. A ceiling fan spins overhead. A curtain made from a sheet sways in the moist air, and music drifts through the window. Outside, a thick fog, golden, lies on a muddy river. We're in a hotel. A $5 room in Coca, the oil boom town. This is the morning we will travel down the Napo River in the direction of Peru on this tributary of the Amazon. As we head downriver, the sun burns through the mist and strange shapes emerge. 100-foot trees with huge strangler vines wrapped around them. Breadfruit trees with shiny, jagged leaves and fruit the size of volleyballs. River swallows dart back and forth across the water, and flocks of green and yellow parrots move overhead and disappear into the jungle. Quechua Indians paddle upriver in their long dugout canoes laden with green plantains, manioc root, pigs, and chickens on their way to the market in Coca. Here, on the southern bank of the Napo, is where the Conoco Oil Company wants to begin a road that will carve through Quechua territory into more remote Indian lands and a national park. Conoco officials have reluctantly agreed that we can accompany their consultant as she makes the company's first contact with the Quechuas.
My job here is really difficult because I belong to a company, oil company, and they just know that the oil companies shoot the Indians, kill them, they take their lands. They don't know what company, they just know the oil companies.
Rosana Fayeta didn't expect to find herself in this position. Only a year ago, as a sociology student and an opponent of oil development in Ecuador, she met Conoco executives who challenged her to work with them to help avoid the ecological mistakes of the past. Now she's a company consultant. In the back seat of a speedboat, she heads toward the Quechua village of Pompeya to unveil the Conoco plan.
You have to be very patient and you have to be very nice because they're not aggressive, but if you lie, they can kill me, really. So that's why I have to be very careful when I'm saying that I'm from Conoco, because I represent interests that they don't like it.
In the village schoolhouse, Rosana stands under a broiling hot tin roof, unrolling a map and pointing to where Conoco plans to build the road. 50 Quechua Indians sit in wooden desks. These people have had a generation of contact with the outside world. They speak some Spanish, wear Western clothes, and trade in the nearby town of Coca. The Quechua have seen the effects of oil production on lands just across the river. They stare blankly as Rosanna, dressed in pink tennis shoes and a New Yorkosaurus t-shirt, her frosted hair tied in a red bow, nervously explains why Kaneko has sent her.
Why does Kaneko want to help you? It's because the highway will pass through here and they want to give you something. This is for the good of all of you. What do you think if we take advantage of this? What could be better than to have a company come here with good intentions?
Rosanna's appearance here is part of Kaneko's plan of dialogue with local communities. But she's not here to ask the Quechua's permission to build the road. Kaneko doesn't need the Quechua's approval. The government has already endorsed the plan. Some Quechuas wonder aloud what Rosanna is doing here, if the plan is going forward, whether they like it or not. From the back of the room, one man voices his doubts.
What will happen to us? I still don't understand why they want to help us. What will the future bring? It won't be just the good things that you are talking about.
Others are worried about losing their lands, about oil spills, about trees cut to build the road. Rosanna reassures them.
There won't be ecological damage, absolutely none. Maybe 1% damage. A few trees will be cut down, but that's nothing. This is a very serious company, and they've hired specialists to do this work.
Throughout the meeting, Rosanna repeats the company's promises. The road will be made with a high-tech plastic to safeguard against erosion. It will be narrow to keep tree cutting to a minimum. And checkpoints will help ensure that settlers won't invade.
Another thing that I ask of you is that you trust me. Sadly, I can't give you any more guarantee than that.
As she leaves, she promises the Quechuas that Kaneko's oil operation will be different than so many that have come before. But Ecuador's recent past is filled with stories of the nightmare of unchecked oil development, of broken pipelines spilling millions of gallons of crude into the rainforest, of toxic wastes pumped directly into streams. So we decide to head north to see for ourselves what oil development has already done to Ecuador. On the next big river to the north, a man calls for a canoe to take him across the river to Cofan Indian land. Here, only a generation ago, Texaco first moved into untouched Amazon forest to begin extracting the oil. The waters are pale gray, almost invisible in the last light of day. A long dugout boat slaps across the Rio Aurico, the river of rich water, bringing us from the oil boom town of Dureno to the Cofan village of the same name. In the Cofan village at the edge of the forest, two lines of wooden houses on stilts flank a soccer field. At a corner of the field is the home of Turibe, a young Cofan leader.
Hemos vivido más tranquilo.
He lies in his hammock, staring up at a ceiling of warped gray boards. Turibe shakes his head, remembering.
The whole structure of our lives has changed. The changes have been so fast, so many things, one on top of the other. Our forefathers, they lived miraculous lives as Cofanas. We hunted in peace whenever we wanted to go. We worked our field. If you had a headache, you cooked the leaves. We lived from the natural medicines. Now, almost all that is gone.
As Turibe speaks, you can see a dark image of his hands dancing along the far wall, lit from the dim light of the kerosene lamp. He talks about the time that Texaco came and began to search the forest for oil. the seismic explosions that scared away the animals, the great network of roads and pipelines the company built, the settlers that streamed down those roads, cutting the forest in their path, the oil and chemical spills that killed the fish and turned the river of rich water into a dead artery that gives the people rashes when they try to bathe there. All things that have happened, he reminds us, just in his own lifetime.
Entonces, cuando la llegada de las compañías, hacia ahí viene una epidemia.
With the coming of the petroleum companies came the epidemics. We didn't know anything about the flu, the measles. Almost all the region was hit. Many fled from here. Those that stayed were finished. So now we don't all live together like we used to. Some live downriver, others upriver in Colombia. That's where they went. They couldn't keep living the old way. It was all contaminated. There were 70,000 of us. Now there are only about 3,000 of us.
3,000 permanecen los cufanes.
In this Cofan village, shortly after the oil companies came, the old shaman died. Turibe says this spiritual healer could turn himself into a jaguar and race through the jungle, could reach into someone's stomach and pull out their sickness, could find the poison vine used for the darts of the blowgun. Now, no one in the village knows how to do these things. All that is left are the shaman's ceremonial songs. Sometimes, you can hear them sung to tourists in the town across the river. The new Dureno is a treeless crossroads, the jungle cut back by poor farmers from the eroded lands of the Pacific coast. An old Cofan man, his eyes in a glaze, has stumbled into a bar of crumbling pink walls and plastic chairs. The old man wears a parrot feather through his nose. It's bright blue and red, beautiful, in the fashion of the old Cofanes. A poster of Rambo stares down at him from one wall, a topless blonde from another. His song, the old man tells us, is about a river and the devil. It was taught to him by the shaman. He asks for some of our beer. In broken, slurred Spanish, he tells us, before lots of wild boar, before lots of hunting, before no petroleum. Then he nearly falls on top of us. He begins to sing, then stops. He forgets what he was about to say. Then he says, I'll sing another song for a few dollars. He is lost. We are frozen to our chairs. His grandson, motionless, watches from a corner of the room.
My name is Ed Davis. I'm the president of Conoco Ecuador, based in Quito.
In the capital, Conoco executives say they are aware of the mistakes of the past and determined not to repeat them.
Conoco is a part of the DuPont Corporation, a for-profit organization. However, there is nothing at all that says that earning a profit is in any way incompatible with a sense of ethics, preservation of human values, and that is the basis on which we are approaching this project. We are convinced that we can do it in a responsible manner, and this truly will be a model for rainforest development.
Davis says Conoco will incorporate state-of-the-art safety procedures to guard against oil spills. The company has offered to set up a fund for local Indian groups to monitor their environmental compliance and to police the road against the intrusion of settlers. The Conoco plan has divided both Indian organizations and environmental groups. In the U.S., the Natural Resources Defense Council, long an opponent of the plan, now says it may be better for Conoco to develop the oil rather than other less responsible companies. In Ecuador, some Indian groups have begun negotiations with Conoco. But other groups are demanding that Conoco agree to a 10-year moratorium on drilling and road construction. They say Conoco has no power to prevent settlers from invading Indian lands. Judith Kimmerling, an American environmental lawyer and author of Amazon Crude, suspects Conoco is better at public relations than environmental safety.
I have reviewed their environmental impact study and found that it's seriously flawed. It's full of conclusions that their activities will have little or no impact. However, there's no data to support this. They expect people to trust them and to take their word for it. I don't think that it's appropriate for us to simply take the word of an oil company that their activities are environmentally benign.
But in Ecuador, a poor country with a huge foreign debt, oil provides for more than half the country's national budget. In Conoco's concession area, there are 300 million barrels of oil lying beneath the rainforest, nearly one-fifth of the country's known oil reserves.
We have to continue to look for oil, exploit oil, because that's crucial.
Luis Roman, president of the state-run oil company Petro Ecuador, sits in the company's 10th-floor boardroom. Over his shoulder, there's a painting, an oil derrick silhouetted in the sunset.
You in developed countries, you had to make a number of choices that led to your development. In the case of Ecuador, we have even less options than the U.S. I mean, the idea of leaving the Indians in the jungle alone, untouched, in their paradise or whatever, as idealistic as it sounds, it is not practical. We become too interdependent, and not even the Indians in the Amazon jungle will ever be left alone.
The distance between the capital, Quito, and our destination, an Indian village near the end of Conoco's proposed road, can be measured in miles or in ages. We fly from Quito, a colonial stronghold of the Spaniards, to visit the Huaorani Indians, a forest-dwelling tribe that only heard of the New World a few years ago. Now the Conoco plan to drill on their lands will bring them quickly into the 20th century. We fly over icy volcanoes in the Andes, and then down over dense jungle canopy cut by snaking ribbons of emerald and brown. Off to the east lies Ecuador's treasure of biological diversity, Yasuni National Park, another place where Conoco plans to drill. We bank low over a ridge, and the Huaorani village comes into view. An old Huaorani man paddles his canoe across a clean, narrow stream. He takes us up the bank to his home, a palm thatch hut. He has holes the size of silver dollars in his earlobes, a Huaorani custom. The Huaoranis are fierce warriors. Only a few years ago, a nearby band killed missionaries trying to contact them.
My name is Wepe Koba. My parents were Perengi. They died in the war between the families, and I was raised alone. I want to die like they did, defending our tradition with our lances.
When he was a young man, staring up at the sky at night, Wepe Koba began to notice these new, fast-moving stars blinking across the sky. A few years later, he learned of a country called Ecuador. 2 years ago, he heard the oil company explosions and saw that the fish went away. Now he hears they want to build a road. The Huaorani are divided about the Conoco Road. Some tell us they oppose it or any other road in their territory. But many in this village have never seen a road or a car. The way Wepe Koba looks at it, a road is just a big footpath to help him go to market.
We could sell our product, like the wild boar and tiger teeth. That's why we want a road, and also to get somebody out fast if they are bitten by a snake. We could take them fast to the city.
Wepe Koba has heard the stories of the roads being built into the jungle and about the settlers who follow. But he says that won't be a problem. He has a lance, he tells us, and a blowgun with poison darts.
We're not scared of the settlers. If they come, we'll kill them with our lances. We won't permit them to enter. We'll defend ourselves, and that's all I have to say.
At the end of our journey, this image of the old man keeps coming back. He's standing outside his hut in the path of the new road, warding off imaginary settlers with his blowgun. Other images return as well, underlining the doubts and promises surrounding the Conoco plan, like the feathered blowguns and spears once at the heart of Kofan Indian culture, now used only to adorn the freshly painted walls of the Hotel Kofan in an oil boom town. And Rosanna, the young Conoco consultant on the bank of the Napo across from the Quechua village she's been courting, sitting there, worrying, wondering.
Sometimes I ask myself, what's going to happen if they don't do what they promise? What happens if Conoco doesn't do a good job? Probably I'm contributing to the destruction of the culture of the Quechuas or the Guaranis because I'm working with an oil company. I don't want that, but you have to be practical. It's not like only Ecuador lives for the petroleum. It's that the world lives for the oil. This is the system. So we just have what Conoco gave to us. It's a hope. It's a little one, but it's a hope. And I trust them. I trust them. An update. When we got back to the States, Conoco did something few people expected. After millions of dollars and months of planning and negotiations with environmental and Indian groups, and before they extracted one drop of oil from the jungle, Conoco pulled out of Ecuador. The official reason? The company wanted to devote more time and money to bigger reserves in Russia and Norway. But a lot of people suspect the real reason was pressure from environmental activists. Conoco was certain to be criticized if it went forward with the plan to build the road and pipeline. And Conoco's discovery in Ecuador was apparently just not big enough to risk the public relations gamble. Now the plan is being carried forward by a little-known Texas oil company called Maxis, formerly a junior partner with Conoco in the project. Maxis officials say they will follow the same environmental plan as Conoco. But some environmentalists say Maxis has far less incentive than Conoco had to build a model for oil development in the rainforest. There is no highly visible public relations image to uphold, no Maxis gas stations in the U.S. for rainforest activists to boycott. Opponents of the plan now find themselves with very little leverage. Meantime, the company has eliminated Conoco's proposed multi-million dollar foundation for environmental oversight and indigenous community development. One prominent environmental attorney who supported negotiations between Conoco and indigenous groups in Ecuador says the company's departure was a tragic opportunity lost. Other environmentalists, however, remain opposed to any kind of oil development in the tropical forest, and some Indian groups have even threatened violence. But the Ecuadorian government says nothing will stop it from extracting the lifeblood of its economy, whatever the implications. Last spring, the government gave final approval to Maxis
for the road and pipeline Conoco first proposed. Soon, oil will be flowing from Huarani Indian Territory and the National Park over the Andes to waiting oil tankers in the Pacific. With Nancy Postero, this is Sandy Tolan reporting. Thank you.